You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. And if you are tuned in right now, I ask that you go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in so we can extend our family of listeners to an even a bigger amount of people. I'd like to let you know that in my travels this past week, I've met many people who tell me that they enjoy the program, either on the radio or on the internet, and that they have a lot of opinions and they like what we're saying, that we're talking common sense, and that's really what it's all about. So if you did receive our email this morning as well, please do send it out to a family member or friend right now. And of course, you'll get a rebroadcast of today's show a little later on, as Henry Chaplinsky will be sending it out to all of our supporters. And please do forward it to your family and friends so that our listenership and our movement will continue to grow. With us today, I'm pleased to say, we have all of our panel members on board. Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Conley, small business advocate and SCORE mentor. Rich Logis, who is the principal of RJL Technology Integration. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I'm Michael Blihash. And as you know, during the last few weeks, we welcomed a very special guest to our broadcast, Curtis Ellis. He's the executive director of the American Jobs Alliance and a well-known journalist. He worked in television, radio, in various campaigns, and also served as a senior policy advisor for our now president, Donald Trump. Mr. Ellis has offered a lot of information to our supporters, and I'm really pleased to welcome him again because, as you know, today is the first day of American Made Month. It's an opportunity for us to do a lot of positive things. I know that Mr. Ellis has been observing the situation in Washington, and I'm going to ask Mr. Ellis to give us a brief report. I know that he's on the go today, so would you open up our broadcast today, and then I'm asking all of our panel members to, and as we get together for this open forum, to really ask the questions and let's really feel out what's going on. Good morning, Curtis. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be here with you. A pleasure to join you from Washington, D.C. this morning, where there's just so much going on. It's hard to know where to start. So I'll just start where I am. Right now I'm in Union Station, a few blocks from the Capitol building, and a few blocks from where the world is abuzz. So a couple of things is, of course, we've all heard about the special counsel activity, where I think the lesson we can draw about this and this wide-ranging, sprawling investigation that has to do with what the job at hand is globalization. On the one hand, you have everybody talking about globalism, globalization. We're all in an interconnected world. But then on the other hand, they get all Twitter and crazy about somebody had made sent an email or received an email talking about talking with somebody from another country. That's as far as I want to go on that subject because we've got much better things to talk about.
Absolutely.
The other development that we saw last week is we've been talking over the last few weeks on the renewable fuel standard and how independent refineries like those we see in Pennsylvania are required to buy these paper credits to show that they're using ethanol and blending ethanol in their fuel. They don't have the physical equipment to actually blend ethanol into the fuels that they're distilling, that they're refining. So they're able to buy these paper credits, which say they purchased ethanol. It's a scheme that was drawn up by Wall Street traders. Now, what happened is if they were able to use these credits to export ethanol, if they were able to, all of the ethanol that we produce in this country, if it was credited towards exports, we'd solve the problem right now. The problem is that the federal government required so much ethanol to be used in fuels in order to meet clean air standards at the EPA. However, ethanol that's blended into fuel, which is then exported, doesn't count toward the mandated requirement of how much ethanol has to be used in the U.S. So domestic refiners can make fuel that contains ethanol, but once they export that fuel, it doesn't count toward the government's mandate. And this makes no sense at all. The effect that it's had is driving up the cost for small independent refiners. And this is unfortunate because now you have refiners that are spending more money to comply with some government mandate on ethanol use than they are for hiring American workers. The problem could be easily solved by allowing ethanol that's exported to count towards the government mandate of gallons of ethanol that have to be produced and used in the U.S. This wouldn't hurt the corn farmers. This wouldn't, it would not hurt them in the least. It wouldn't hurt the small business, the small refiners throughout the Northeast. Donald Trump would be able to keep his promise to the ethanol, the corn farmers in Iowa, and be able to keep his promise to the workers in the Northeast who are desperate for jobs. But that's not what's happened. Last week, the EPA issued a judgment, and they decided that they would not allow ethanol that's exported to be counted toward the millions and millions of gallons that are required to be used under their own regulations.
Well, Curtis, I'm hoping that the administration now in Washington will end this type of thing, because how can you count one side of the street and not the other side? Everything
exactly.
Should be equal. It doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make sense, but what I suspect has happened is that these Wall Street paper pushers who are making a fast buck off trading paper credits, they're making money on this decision, and that's just not right because it's hurting the refinery workers, and it's also hurting the corn farmers, the people who are making the raw material that goes into concocting ethanol. So once again, we've seen a situation where the finance people, the guys on Wall Street, are really shaping the economy to the detriment of the actual productive sector of the economy, which leads into the next issue, which is tax reform. The president, during his campaign, laid out a four-point program for getting the economy moving again. It was trade reform, fixing these trade deals which are imbalanced against Americans, tax reform, removing burdensome taxes that are holding back investment, and actually encouraging companies to invest overseas rather than in the U.S., regulatory reform, which we've got these crazy regulations, kind of like the one I just described, which are hurting American workers and American businesses. And we also have energy reform, which is directly related to what I said before. So now the next issue up is tax reform. It was supposed to be unveiled today, the president's America First tax reform, but they're still working on some of the details, and it's now expected to be released tomorrow. I'd love to hear what everybody thinks about what are some good what are some policies that we'd like to see in this tax reform plan? Because it's actually going to be written by Congress. According to the Constitution, the president can propose legislation, but according to the Constitution, all tax measures originate in the House of Representatives. So the president's laid out a framework of lowering the rate on small businesses, lowering the tax rate, and giving a tax cut to middle-class families, and raising the standard deduction, and then providing an extra low rate so that the trillions of dollars that corporations are holding offshore can be repatriated, brought back to the U.S., and invested here. So that's the framework that the president has laid out. The details have yet to be written and yet to be discussed and will be discussed for some time. So that's the big news that everybody's awaiting. Some people were waiting to hear what the special counsel is going to do. The rest of this city here is waiting, and I imagine most Americans are more interested to see if they're going to get a tax cut or what's going to happen to these, you know, this crazy complicated system we have for filing taxes where we end up having to go to H&R Block and spending a lot of money with them and spending a lot of money on headache bills when it comes time to file their taxes.
You're right, and the president's right, and everybody in Congress really has to work together. There's no way we're going to be able to tax ourselves into prosperity, which is really what I see has happened in America for maybe 30 years. Everything is, well, just tax it, and give the money here, give the money there. If you don't have the people on the job able to earn the money and pay the taxes, you then turn into more and more of a poorer society. In order to end poverty, we have to bring those jobs back, bringing the money back, putting people back to work so they get a paycheck at the end of the week. And out of that paycheck, taxes are paid. The president, is, as a businessman, I see his point. We haven't discussed this type of tax reform since probably President Reagan. And I'm going to now turn to Mark Andel. What do you think about how you can get people back in your place with some lower taxes on a national level?
Yeah, good morning, guys. Good morning, Lark and Henry, Rich and Curtis. Welcome back. Mike, hope all is well. Yeah, great morning here in Buffalo. November 1st, I get fired up. It's the start of the holiday season and a very important time of year. Now, Mike, you bring up this is a great subject with the taxes. You know, again, government, Washington's got to clean up the lemonade stand. They can't, you know, they got to control what's going out. You got to bring in more than you give out, basic business. And we talk about taxes a lot. New York State is very, very high on taxes. You know, we probably pay 40 to 50%, almost half a dollar you make. And I tell everybody every day it's hard to make $1. And a lot of people don't understand that. But we're in the game, right? We're, you know, the aliens are running the media and, you know, we're in the game. So it's very hard to make a dollar. So anything, Mike, that can help put money back in the people, the middle class pocket, so they can give more money and have more money to spend. But as a business owner, I like to see tax relief so I can buy equipment, and I think it should be all tied to livelihoods. I think any plan should help encourage a business to grow, to create livelihoods. And even if you automate, you can create livelihoods because you're having trainers. You need people to work on equipment, run the equipment, computer program. There's a lot to this, but I'm always about livelihoods, and I think that plan should be about livelihoods. Anything you can cut, you know, at the end of the year, you know, first we got to back up. We have to create work and jobs in the United States of America so we can sell and we can make a profit that taxes even play a part in. A lot of people don't realize, Mike, if you're not making any money as a business, you don't need a tax cut. So there's a lot of things, Mike, to be discussed. I think it's awesome they're looking into it. It is too complicated, like Curtis said, much too complicated. I think it could be a simple system that works for everybody, not only the homeowner, but the business owner also.
And you know what else, Mark? I agree. And it's good that everything is being put on the table for everybody to see. I'd like to see in writing exactly what's being proposed.
Yeah,
over the years, it was just always, well, they passed this and they passed that. I want to see what's being passed. I want to see what was in all the trade agreements, how it helped us as America, and how we helped other countries as well.
One thing I'd like to add, you know, Donald Trump being a businessman, this is where it's got to shine. And even, Curtis, you mentioned that Congress has to design this. Him being a businessman understands what it means to make a dollar and understands what it takes to do that. And that's the best thing we've got going with this new president, too. And that, you know, that's why I'm excited about this. I think they can come up with a plan that actually works, and it'll take time, but it's got to work.
Dr. Rich Loges, tell me what is happening.
And good morning to our listeners. Curtis, how you doing? Thanks so much for you hopped into the lion's den, and you're handling this torture of coming on the show so well. My compliments. I have to tell you, you coming on to give us all these updates. I love talking about taxes, actually, because taxes are directly tied into the size of government. Federal government was grown double from 2008 until 2016. So it was doubled more than the prior 232 years of America's existence. That's what the math of it is. And that's the great, beautiful thing about math and finance. It doesn't care about your feelings, your religion, or where you're born. Just math, it's just finance. Now, that's not all President Obama's fault. To be clear about this and be fair, I'm not going to get into it, but it's not all of his fault. So we'll be fair about that point. But I like talking about taxes because it directly ties in the size of government. The federal bureaucracy is too large. Businesses and workers don't keep enough of their money. What you said at the very end of your opening point about the complexity. We talk a lot about the 35% corporate tax rate. That's not really the problem, though, Curtis, in my opinion, because there are so many loopholes and so many workarounds that it's never 35%. The problem with the tax code is it's too damn complex. It's a torturous, complex, obtuse, no one understands type way of collecting revenue into the treasury. Am I on the right path somewhat with that, Curtis?
You certainly are on the right path. Let me give you a concrete example. But before I get to the concrete example, you're absolutely on the right path. 35% corporate tax rate. The other side says, well, the corporations don't really pay that much because they get deductions. There's loopholes that they work. Well, yes. And who does that make money for? The well-heeled white shoe law firms and corporate accounting offices. You've got a bunch of lawyers, a fleet of accountants who are paid a whole lot of money to work all these loopholes. And who gets to hire them? Only the biggest corporations. Small businesses can't afford these really expensive lawyers and accountants to work all the loopholes, so they end up paying the 35%. The giant global corporations that park their money overseas, put them in shell companies based in Ireland or gosh knows where, and stash the money in the Cayman Islands, they get off paying no taxes at all because they have paid a whole lot of lawyers, a whole lot of lobbyists, and a whole lot of accountants. And guess where those people live? They live in Washington, D.C. So the tax code is written to help the swamp denizens in this town right here where I'm sitting right now. Now, here's a perfect example of the complexity and how the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. And that's a form of, I don't know if it's ADHD or autism or aphasia or some type of learning disability, but it's epidemic in Washington. The left hand does not know what the right hand is doing. We have a spastic government. And here's an example. The insurance industry. We've got, when you go out there and the U.S. trade representative goes out there and tries to negotiate trade deals, in the previous administrations, they try to open up foreign markets for American insurance companies. So American insurance companies can sell insurance in Vietnam and South Korea and everywhere else. While the left hand is doing that, the right hand has written a tax code which gives foreign insurance companies doing business in the U.S. a competitive advantage over American insurance companies doing business in the U.S. foreign insurance companies working in this country are able to write off their profit and avoid paying taxes on their profits for insuring mansions in Beverly Hills or factories in the few remaining factories in Pennsylvania. Meanwhile, the government is working overtime to make it easier for American companies to insure bamboo huts in Vietnam or write some other kind of insurance policies in our so-called trading partners' home countries. So, you know, here's a place where you see the complexity of the tax code. It's overly complex. It's working to disadvantage American companies and benefit foreign companies. So we've got to clear out all of these loopholes, clear out this underbrush, make it simpler, make it easy to understand, and make it so that small business is on the same level playing field as the big businesses. Right now, Apple Computer is able to use every loophole thanks to a platoon of lawyers and accountants and clever guys. They avoid paying taxes, but if you're trying to start up some business there in Pennsylvania, you're going to get SOCO with the tax code.
Curtis, I'm thank you, because I'm smiling ear to ear, because it's another voice other than my ranting and raving. When I say on this show, and I've been saying it for years, the wealthy love big government. It's why the majority of millionaires and billionaires are Democrats in America. Fact.
That's right.
Now, it's not just them. We know that Republicans did too.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We know the Republicans, we know they spend. We know it. I don't know what it is. I've got a conspiracy theory, Curtis. I'm convinced that after every member of Congress pledges the oath to the Constitution, there's a secret other session afterwards where they talk about their addiction to revenue and taxes and spending. I'm sure of it. I'm convinced of it. It's like the skull and bones of this thing, right? You know, whatever that is. I don't, you know, I always used to hear about that with John Kerry and all these people. I'm convinced. So the Repubs, they love that too. But
I'm afraid
them,
you're right.
they've monopolized big government. So the more complex the tax code is, the more it benefits the gazillionaires and the big mega corporate business industrial complex. Why
well,
does the president
exactly right.
know that?
He
was a billionaire who dealt with that day in and day out. That's why.
That's right. And, you know, the level of corruption goes to another stage here. When you have big government controlling so much and impacting so many businesses, what it becomes is an extortion racket. So all the members of Congress can go to the special pleaders from each business and say, give me campaign donations, and I will make sure that big government doesn't gore your ox. If you didn't have government programs and a complex tax code and so many decisions being made in Washington, these guys sitting in the House of Representatives and sitting in the U.S. Senate wouldn't be able to extort campaign donations from the millionaires and billionaires saying, we'll give you special favors. Since when is it government's job to give out favors to anybody? But that's the kind of government we have now. It's intruded on so much business, on so many aspects of our life, that anybody that wants relief, well, they know the price they have to pay. They have to make a hefty donation to one of these guys running for re-election every 2 years or every 6 years or every 4 years, hoping to get a little relief. Meanwhile, folks like you and me, we don't have the money to be handing out six-figure checks to these politician extortionists.
Well said. And I want to tell you something. Over the years, when people wanted to know exactly what was happening with contracts and agreements and all, there was no way to get that information. The internet has changed some of that, and I hope that the president and the administration and all the people in the House and Senate, both sides of the aisle, and the independents as well, will start putting that on the internet so that people can be educated. What the hell is really going on? In the state of Pennsylvania, in order for you to get information, you have to go to the Right to Know office in the state of Pennsylvania. A place was created that you don't ask someone who doesn't want to give you the information. You go to the office because you have the right to know as a taxpaying citizen. Unbelievable. You can't go to the office and ask, well, what contract funds that, or how is that benefiting the people? No, you have to go through this merry-go-round of all sorts of idioticness to get one answer that should be available at their fingertips at the moment's notice. Dr. Larkin Connolly, tell me what you are enjoying about this tax code issue.
Well, you know, good morning, everybody, to the panel, to all of our listeners. Curtis, welcome back. Michael, Henry, congratulations on getting a good running back for your football team. Maybe you guys can win a football game now. My father taught me at a very young age, don't follow children's acts and don't follow dog acts. Now I have to add Logis and Ellis to that list because they clearly have covered just about everything that I cared to say. We're all talking about the same thing, whether it's taxes, whether it's medical coverage, whatever it is, it all goes back to this extraordinarily high level of cronyism that absolutely permeates Washington, D.C. And the fact that we have a tax code that's so complicated as it is absolutely a product of the CPA lobbyists and the block lobbyists and all of the large firms that do taxes that make a tax code so complex that the average guy probably could do his own taxes, but he doesn't have enough liquor in the house to get through them. So, you know, it's just absolutely absurd. And if it does have a hard time in the process of struggling to get the tax code simplified, we all know who's going to be voting against it and who's going to be trying to stop it. And that's that lobbyist. The lobbyists in D.C. that have paid millions and millions of dollars to Congress and everybody along the line in Washington to make the tax code as difficult as it is. Listen, you know, 80% of our tax burden is paid by the top 15% in our country. The bottom 50% hardly pay anything. Is it fair? I'm not here to say it's fair. All I'm saying is that we have to take a different look. We have to take a look that allows taxes to fund growth in this nation. Taxes that are spent by the government on infrastructure or whatever that's good for the common good. But the situation that we have now, the fact that we have $20 trillion worth of debt and we can't tax ourselves fast enough to get out of that, leads me back to Lincoln. I believe it was Abe Lincoln's famous quote that says, you'll never improve the poor in a country on the backs of the rich. That doesn't work. That's not the design. It's got to be done in our world by a strong economy.
I can't agree more, Larkin. Perfect. And you know, Curtis, while you're in Washington and you're speaking with those that are concerned about America's future, kindly remind them that right now, as we speak, we have 50 million students in America's schools paid for by America's taxpayers. I think it's time for the boys and girls, especially in the middle schools and high schools, to have some sort of a future, to know who they are, what they want to be. I mean, let's put an emphasis on jobs and job skills in the country. Let's get the businesses together and talk to the school boards to say, we need this type of employee in the future. Maybe it would be good for you to include your curriculum to make sure we have people who have technology backgrounds, not just a fancy sheepskin that you graduate with, but an actual job that you can go to. And boys and girls should be asked that by the time they reach the seventh and eighth grade. And from there, it should move forward. And the reason I'm saying that is those are our tax dollars supporting a lot of that education system. So why not use it to educate our young people and let them know the best way to be the best American you can be is to have a job skill, and an education.
Amen. Amen. The president and the labor secretary, Alexander Acosta, have talked about fixing our apprenticeship programs, our apprenticeship and job training programs, so they work more closely with community colleges, with colleges, and most importantly, as you just said, with employers. We want to make sure we're training people for the jobs that are out there, rather than just, okay, we have a job training program, but we're going to train you for something, and there's no employer at the back end who's ready to hire you. So that's a huge, huge, huge fix that needs to be done. A good example of this, I remember back in the Bill Clinton presidency, he told everybody, forget about those factory jobs we're sending to Mexico thanks to NAFTA. Forget about the factory jobs we're sending to China thanks to bringing China into the World Trade Organization. They're going to be new, better jobs in technology. You're all going to become computer programmers. Everybody's going to be a computer programmer. Let's put aside the ridiculousness of the idea that everybody's going to do the same thing. I mean, again, that's Washingtonitis. I'm sitting in a city full of lawyers. Everybody's a lawyer and a lobbyist, and the lobbyists are all lawyers too. So you look around this town, and everybody's the same thing. So the people in this town who write policies think they're going to have a whole country from sea to shining sea, and everybody's going to be a computer programmer or something like that. It's just ridiculous. But putting that aside for a moment, they said, forget about the factory jobs. The jobs of the future are in technology, information technology, computer programming. So they encourage people to go to school to become computer programmers. But again, left hand, let me tell you what the right hand's doing. The left hand's telling everybody, go to school, become a computer programmer. Right hand is admitting hundreds of thousands of foreign students, foreign workers as guest workers in the IT field. You've got the H-1B visa program, the H-1A visa program. You've got an alphabet soup of visa programs bringing in guest workers to work in IT, which is driving down the wages, not only driving down the wages of the people who have jobs or might get a job, those boys and girls who are graduating from college, it's also directly replacing those. So everybody who went to the trouble and spent the money to enter a new career and find a new career in the IT field is now being knocked out by these guest workers from other countries who work for lower wages. And so, again, you want to have jobs, you want to have training for jobs that exist, and you want to prioritize the American citizens to get those jobs. I don't think that's asking too much. What do you think?
Not at all. I think that it would be good, first of all, if the president, which I had written the Bleach plan about 3 years ago, it's still up on the front page of our internet site, where the first objective was to get the governors of every state in the union, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, get them into Washington and let those people discuss this. What are we going to do to attract more businesses to our states? What are we going to do to make sure that this year's graduate, in 18 has a place to hang his hat when he graduates, that there are businesses willing and able to take those people in. I'm against all of these guest workers coming in until we find out exactly how we're going to employ the American people that need and want jobs right now.
And Mike, you know, you bring up a good point, bringing business to your state. My state's New York. You can go to taxfoundation.org, and our federal tax rate's 39.6, the highest rate, but New York state tax is 8.82, the highest rate. You add the franchise tax that you have to pay. You're over 50%. To get a business to come to your state or to make it, you know, some incentives out there, you've got to work on these tax, you know, on the state level and the federal level. You talk about complexity. My accountant worked for GE. There was 50 accountants that did his same job, just deciphering the tax code and helping GE find different ways to save and to use the tax code. You talk about complex. 50 people just for that fine-tuning and detailing and making sure you take advantage of everything out there. So we definitely have to make it easier. And you get on skilled trades, again, you know, I'm involved with the PTEC program, the Dream It, Do It, internship with the local schools. This shortage is incredible. Not only do we need a culture change, we have to make it okay to work, let alone skilled trades, because we're hitting entitlement and arrogance everywhere where people want these handouts. And, Mike, what's your thoughts on that? I mean, the culture has to change where you need to provide for yourself.
Well, I will tell you, working in human services, I can tell you, 25 years ago, when you were unemployed, Mark, you had to go through a series to find out what you were best suited to do. At that point, I guess many of the graduates were not coming out with all kind of technology backgrounds and all. So they did give you some kind of guidance. Today, all that has been taken away. You don't even see physically a person. You go for unemployment, you do it over the phone. You do it, everything is done over the internet. Yeah. This is not the way it's supposed to be. No. You have to have face-to-face confrontation with someone. Someone has to see you. Someone has to know you. Someone has to have an interest in you. This is also something that the school counselors have to be in tune with. What are they doing with their children? How are they advising them? Are they able to sit down and offer them a little pamphlet? Would you want to be this, or would you want to go into nursing? Would you want to go into welding? Would you want to go into electricity? There's none of that available. Everything that the counselors are doing is problematic. Family problems, issues after school. I'm afraid to leave school. Somebody's going to beat me up. It's all this nonsense. Instead of us paying attention to what we're doing to try to get America where it should be and should have never changed from 25 years ago.
Well, you know, that's all well and good. But I trust that everybody on this panel and most everybody that's listening to this program, I'm sure everybody listening to this program, had breakfast this morning or plans to have lunch or is going to have a square meal today. But I got news for you. There are over 1 billion people in this, you know, on this earth that are not going to have a meal today, that have no idea where their next meal is coming from. And I'm sure we can talk about it, and I think it's all great. But somewhere along the line, we have to take into realization that 50% of the jobs in America today, right now, today, are going to be affected by robotics, by automation.
And you're right, Lark, and I agree with you 100%. But in order to keep the robots going, in order to keep the supply lines supplied, you need people to do that. You need people to sell the products. You need people to order the products. You need people to be there to service the products. We're not doing it now.
We are 36th in the world in math.
That's right.
36th.
That wasn't that way 25 years ago. Where were we 25 years ago?
I have no idea.
Well, if we look it up on the net, we'll see that we were way up there because people had some idea what they were going to do. Today, our young people graduate. We do job fairs with our agency. Many of the people, as I mentioned before, they're wonderful people, beautifully dressed, great resumes. but no place to hang their hat because the jobs that they need are already taken up. By the time the product comes to America, it's already packaged. It's already advertised. We don't need any Americans. What do you say, Curtis?
Well, I think it's what you say. We need people to service and build the robots. The top 10 robotic companies in the world, none of them are American. They're Japanese, they're Swiss, they're German. What happened to American know-how? What happened to American technological leadership? That's an important question. The point is that, as you said, we're 36 in math. That's inexcusable. We've got this huge, we're probably number one in lawyers, though. We produce more lawyers than we are producing engineers, I'm sure. This, again, is inexcusable. You go to the engineering departments of the major schools, you go to MIT, you're going to find Indian students, Chinese students, you're going to find all kinds of foreign students, but not many American students. Again, this is a question of the culture and priorities, and what do we value? Everybody thinks they're going to be an NBA star or an NFL star or a pop star. They're told to value that. The entertainment industry has become the paragon. I remember when I was a kid, you wanted to be Albert Einstein, or you wanted to be Jonas Salk. You wanted to find the cure for cancer, the cure for polio, or put a rocket to the moon. Now people want to put a three-point shot into the basket. I mean, this is just crazy. We're leading the world. We're 36 in math, but these kids graduate from school. They can tell you all about gender studies and transgender studies and ethnic transgender studies. Now you read that you've got professors in the hard sciences, professors in the mathematics department, professors in the engineering departments talking about gender studies mathematics. I mean, this is crazy. And why is it that Harvard is doing, in the Harvard Medical School, says right there in its mission statement, our mission is to promote a more inclusive society. No, your mission is to graduate doctors who know what the hell they're doing.
And Curtis, that's why I didn't go to Harvard. I went to Mistake University. It's right next to Harvard.
I don't want a doctor who's inclusive. I want a doctor who knows what he's doing when he cuts my head open.
And this is right. And Curtis, you're absolutely right that we don't have the technology people here in the USA. Everything that comes on the market that's advertised, that's coming from a foreign country. How is that possible? So many of those products were invented and first made in this country for 30, 40 years. Now we got nothing from this country, and American workers are suffering. Our economy has suffered for many years, and we have to change it around. It starts with the schools. As I said, we have 50 million students in America's schools, and we're paying a large share of that tax dollar to keep those schools open, whether it's federal taxes, state taxes, or local taxes. And yet the taxpayer has no say in the matter as to what the child is going to graduate and know what to do with his life when he graduates.
And the other thing is, a lot of the basic research that goes into producing some of these products is paid for by taxpayers. It's being done at these schools that are supported by tax dollars, either directly or indirectly through government-backed loans for the students who are paying through the nose their tuition. They're paying these exorbitant tuition rates because it's all on borrowed money, and they're not aware that they're going to have to pay this back someday with interest. But anyway, the basic research is footed by you and me, U.S. taxpayers. But then when it becomes applied research to the technology and to the product, that's done overseas. So the basic research is done here. Taxpayers foot the bill, but when it's turned into product development and technology, which is where all the jobs are, that's then sent offshore. And that really ought to change, too. That's just not right. in my opinion.
I agree with you. And, you know, Curtis, being in historic Philadelphia so often and talking with many of the visitors, some of the people that come from foreign countries, they have it all over us because they come. They're doctors. They are professionals. They're inventors. They're people who are making the products, the product lines. They're coming from Germany, sending those machines all over the world, but they're not sending them to America. There is the there's the biggest thing. I don't say too much to complain to them, but they say, yes, we have a big business outlet in China, a big business outlet in Japan for German-made products. Our recent orders for trains in the United States have all been coming from foreign countries. What happened to all of our companies in America? Where are they at?
Oh, well, we've lost that know-how. Through malfeasance or just ignorance or just by not paying attention. A very good friend of mine was an engineer, he's now retired, at General Motors and at Delphi, the heating and cooling division of General Motors. He has the basic patents on, he developed the basic patents, GM owns them, on auto air conditioning. And the latest generation of auto air conditioning. His job was to set up factories overseas. GM started producing in Mexico and in Korea, and he was over there setting up the factories, training the engineers, et cetera. What happened at some point, General Motors wanted to start making air conditioners, auto air conditioning, in the U.S. again. And they had totally forgotten how to do it. I'm not exaggerating. So they lost the know-how. And so they had to bring General Motors, which developed the air conditioning in the first place, developed the technology, ended up having to bring engineers from other countries back here to relearn how to do it. And that's what's happened in so many industries. We lose the people, we lose the know-how. And this is what Mark is talking about with the shortage of skilled labor. Once it's only a generation away. If you don't train the next generation on how to do these things, you don't have the people. And it's really frightening.
Exactly. Curtis, that's huge. And I said I did a speech for a Dream at Do It, and there was 21 teachers from Western New York. But they only have tech training left in tech course left in these schools around Western New York. And they said, we've got classrooms set up with no teachers now. Now, that's a major problem. Only 8th grade in the one school, the teacher responded. 9th, 10th, and 11th, these kids will not have training because it's a nice setup classroom for tech, but there's no teacher. And we said, you know, you got to go get your 6 years degree, your master's, get training in teaching, give up your six-figure job to take a $40,000 job to teach in these tech schools. So there's such a shortage. The average welder age is 68 years old. That's incredible, Curtis.
You know, but Curtis, I'd like to see these tax reductions be directed to schools.
That'd be great.
And to businesses that will allow people to come from a well-paid job and get into the classroom so that we can restore America to where it should be in the technologies, whether it's electricity. I know here in our own Philadelphia area, we have several trade schools, and the people that enter the trade schools from well-respected high schools, and they go there, the teachers who are there are amazed how little the people know about, you know, turning a light switch on. How do you change a light switch? How do you use a real adding machine? Everything is done on the phone now. There's lack of common sense. When you go into a classroom, all cell phones off. You pay attention to the teacher. Everybody gets around the table. This is how we do it. It's hands-on. It's like, it can't be explained. But I would appeal to you to let your people in Washington know that we have 50 million students that need our attention desperately. We have 50 governors that should be brought into Washington at the president's request and talk to them about getting those jobs back in the state so more taxes can be collected as people earn a living, not look to government to be able to support their daily existence.
Amen. I'm going to take that suggestion, and I'm going to go right now. I have to leave you so I can run over. And
Curtis, seriously, I'm depending on you to keep us posted. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for all that you've done. Thanks for spreading the word about our November American Made Month efforts. And we'll look to talk to you very, very soon.
I look forward to talking with you next week, if you'll have me.
We're certainly glad. We'll look for the report of what's happening, and we're going to talk more about what can those tax reductions be directed to, and how we, what happens in Washington if you do not start pressing the people who are elected to do a job to finally do their job, nothing will be done.
Amen.
Curtis,
take care.
Have a great one. Thank you.
Thank you, Curtis. On a bit of a light note here, because I don't want us to end the broadcast without wishing our esteemed and venerable audio engineer, even though it's a day late, but that's because his birthday is not today, Henry Chaplinsky, our great, amazing mute button audio engineer.
I was trying to keep that under wraps. Thanks for yesterday with Facebook, by the way, Rich. Thanks.
Yeah, no, that's,
happy birthday, Henry.
I sent Henry a message on Facebook because last week Hillary Clinton had her 70th birthday, and I saw something that was from last year, whatever this is, two weeks before the election, where Hillary Clinton sent a tweet out wishing herself a happy birthday by saying happy birthday to this future president. And I thought it was a joke. I mean, I thought someone just did a Photoshop, and then I realized, Larkin, that she actually did that.
Yes, she did.
So number one, it's kind of weird to wish yourself a happy birthday. And you know, those damn elections, Michael, always getting in the way of coronations. Ain't that something?
Yeah, I thought it was a joke.
And so now I'm going to keep calling Henry the future president. So this, for our listeners, they're going to know that's the new in-joke when I say our future president. And just for the record, Henry did not wish himself a happy birthday, but I'm going to do that on air. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich. Henry is the best. Henry's low-keyed with four kids and a wife and all the obligations. He's a coach and all this stuff for these teams and a mentor and all. I give him credit that he's able to put up with me.
And he's 100% American, Mike.
Is a major thing. You know, by the way, I want you to know that Henry is the guy who puts our internet site together. He's helped me prepare our third annual November American Made Month effort. We are having proclamations presented by the House and the Senate. People are starting to know that we're there and trying to move forward. I'm pleased with people like Curtis Ellis, who have close contacts in Washington and is letting them know that little efforts like ours are making a big difference in the life of the way things are happening in America. And by the way, I'm pleading with everybody. This is the beginning, the first day of November as American Made Month. This Friday, the 3rd, Saturday, the 4th, and Sunday is the 5th. I'm pleading with you to go out and support your local businesses. And as Larkin says so often, and I agree 1,000%, no matter if you are shopping at a brick and mortar store or online, kindly look around to see the products that you may need or want to give as a gift that are made in America. And you can certainly do that simply by going on the front page of our site and take a look at some of the items that Mark Andel has had available for a long time. They're all 100% made in America. Mark, I'll be promoting you from now until forever, because I'm really pleased to tell people, and they just tell me, I can't believe this guy goes through, everything has to be American made, even the cellophane bag, the packaging, the staples. I tell that story to everybody. And people are very jealous of it, by the way, because people sat back for so long. They lived in a bubble and everything is fine. And, you know, every kiss and hug and this and that. That's not the way life is really meant to be. We're supposed to look out for one another. How are we helping one another by not watching what's happening in our country, by just letting things go forward, by letting the elected officials run the ship and not the people paying the taxes. It didn't make sense all these years. It's time to speak up. Thankfully, with the help of Larkin, Rich, Mark, and Curtis, and so many of our great guests, we've been able to do that. I'm going to ask you before I go to the gang, please check out the front page of our site. Look at the November American Made Month. There's a whole suggestion of ways to celebrate during the month and also ways to support your businesses. As I said, this is National Small Business Weekend, the November edition coming up on Tuesday, November the 7th. It's Election Day. How about looking at the candidates, see what they have to offer? What are they talking about jobs? Are they interested in who's, you know, who's have a job, or are they interested more in keeping the bureaucracy growing and the welfare system, you know, bubbling? With those kind of people, we don't need anymore, and we have to make it known. We don't need that kind of person. And when you go in the booth on the 7th, during the election, just push the person. Maybe this time it's time for a change. Look for the person who's not as well known, who's not as well funded, and give them an opportunity. Yes, Larkin, I know you're going to respond to that.
Well, no, I agree wholeheartedly. I can almost promise you that the turnout for an off presidential year election is going to be somewhere between 12 and 18%, which is pretty disgusting. But I want to dot some I's and cross some T's. If we really want to straighten out our educational system, we have to get into a position. We have to decide that we're going to pay our teachers a living wage.
Absolutely.
Period. Amen.
And we're also, with that living wage, we are going to expect results. Not just from the superintendent's ruling, but from the taxpayers' ruling, from the people who are sending their children to school, how they would like to see their children educated, what programs should be available to their sons and daughters. Not just the school board decides this. It's time for the employers, the businesses, to go to the school boards and say, I need this type of person over the next 3, 5, and 10 years. How are you going to give me those numbers that I need? That's when America will have a future, when our boys and girls come out of school with more than just a piece of paper, but with the reality of a future.
And I believe the industrial arts teacher, the welding teacher, should make a lot more. Larkin, you're hitting a good trail.
Absolutely.
Make $40,000. That's the problem.
Absolutely. No lobbyist should be welcome at the door. No lobbyist. I know what's going on now in Washington, and the lobbyists are not happy. They're trying every which way to rip down all the things that are good happening in Washington because they want to keep the old system in place because the old system gives them money. Closing remarks. Thank you all for joining us. And Rich, what do you have to say as we sign off today?
Guys, thank you. I just wanted to say, a few nights ago, Hillary Clinton said she was going as the president for Halloween, and I said on my social media, didn't she wear that costume in 2008?
Mark.
Yeah, I just made it. America Matters, guys. This November, December, this holiday season, go out and do your part. And listeners, please buy American, vote with your dollar. It works.
Very good. Larkin.
Happy birthday, Henry. Your birthday present this year is the Philadelphia Eagles.
Well, until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, I want to wish all of you the very best. Our thanks once again to Curtis Ellis, who is our voice in Washington, and we'll be looking forward to hearing from him next week with an update on what's happening with the tax code. Until then, have a great one.
Have a great day, guys.
Thanks, everyone.